Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Call into us today for your flu and COVID vaccines at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Now, the Minister for the Environment, Climate and Communications, Eamon Ryan, will travel to the UN Climate Change Conference in Dubai tomorrow, also known as COP28, where world leaders meet to try to fight global warming. But already it has been undermined by a report from the BBC which says that the United Arab Emirates, which is hosting the conference, plan to use the event to strike oil deals with other countries. This year is on track to be the hottest on record. And Minister Eamon Ryan joins me now from our Iraq the studio. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
Mary Robinson, who is going as well to COP as part of the Elders Group, she says that report from the BBC is worrying, it's inappropriate that this is happening, and that COP28 is already somewhat compromised. Do you agree?
Yeah, we have to make sure the exact opposite of that expansion in oil and gas use happens and that we get agreement on the phased reduction, phase out, winding down of fossil fuels. And so that has to be, that's what Ireland, as part of the European negotiation team, that'll be our position. And we have to get strong decisions in that regard. The world has gone into a dramatic change in climate in the last year. The weather systems have gone off what the scientists expected. Unfortunately, much higher temperatures, much higher flooding, much higher climate events happening sooner than we expected. So, and we know the source of the problem. It's the burning of fossil fuels. Mm. So we have to, rather than expanding it, we have to go in the exact opposite direction.
But Minister, the host country, the UAE, plans to strike oil deals at COP. It's crazy.
Yeah, there won't be any oil deals struck at COP. I'm certain of that. But certainly nothing that will be part of the international negotiations. It's not easy, Claire, to get 200 countries to agree to the scale and speed of the change we need to make. But this is the only process we have. The United Nations approach is the only approach to take. You can't do it on a bilateral basis. And I was at the pre-COP negotiations about 4 weeks ago now in Abu Dhabi. I think there is the potential for us to get that sort of consensus on the need for radical action towards reduction in fossil fuels.
Because the president of COP is also the chief executive of the United Arab Emirates State Oil and Gas Company, which is one of the biggest fossil fuel companies in the world. Is he an honest broker, the right person to lead COP28?
You have to. If I'm going to be negotiating with someone, you can't go in to pick them one way or the other. But what I think Europe can do, and Ireland has a significant role and voice within our European position, is work particularly with a lot of the other countries, particularly in the developing world, where we're seeing the impacts of climate change hitting hardest. And in reaching consensus towards an agreement, it's that body of opinion, it's that voice from countries which are ready to see the impact is the most important and the one that we'll be working with to try and get agreement on radical action.
You're pressing for the polluter pays principle at COP. So this would be fossil fuels companies contributing financially to help fight climate change. So it's him, isn't it? It's the president of COP who will need to be convinced.
We need to switch the money. We know by the early years in the next decade, about 10 years' time, less than that, the International Energy Agency have done the analysis to show we need something like 4.5 trillion euros spent every year on the clean energy alternative. And we particularly need that to be spent in the developing countries, which is not happening at the present. I mean, there is change happening. This is the first year that the investment in clean energy has overtaken investment in fossil. Solar power is cheaper, wind power is cheaper. It is winning. It is going to triple globally in the next 7 years. But what we need to make sure that happens in every part of the world for a variety of reasons. Firstly, to meet our climate targets, but secondly, to put justice at the centre of this response. We need a fast transition, and it won't be fast unless it's a just transition. And it won't be just unless it's fast too. And I think the way we can do that, and what Ireland has a particular role, we were very influential last year in being able to get agreement on the establishment of a loss and damage fund. And we were very influential in the last year since then in working to set out how that will be created. And I hope and I expect that will be agreed today, tomorrow, before this weekend.
Okay, so
I think then we use that as a stepping stone to say, okay, we've agreed and we've got cooperation in that sort of approach, but we need the same cooperation now to switch the money from investment in fossil fuels, which is the cause of the problem, to the solution. And that solution, for the likes of Europe, if we invest in Africa, where there's a fundamental injustice, there are 650 million people without any access to electricity. If we do that, it's good for us in Europe as well. It addresses the issue of forced migration. It reduces the conflicts that are happening in North Africa, in the Horn of Africa and elsewhere, and that is in our interest, and that's what we'll be pushing and promoting.
Minister, can I ask you a little more about the Loss and Damage Fund? And people will have heard about this in the past, wealthy countries paying into a fund for poorer countries to help pay for the damage caused by climate change. Now, Ireland will pay into that fund, won't it?
Yeah, we'll do so in a coordinated way in the next couple of days so that it's part of, we have to start it. It has to start immediately. And we'll be one of the countries, I think one of the leading first countries to provide the financing to be able to get it up and running.
Because Stroker and Christian Aid have suggested that the amount that we could be paying into this might reach by 2030 up to 2.5 billion. Do you agree?
They gave a presentation in the Dáil last week and I was very glad to go to them. I think they're right about the scale of the problem. The exact mechanism as to where the funding has come from, I don't believe it can all come from the Exchequer. I don't believe it will work effectively if it's just a relatively small number of governments who are deploying the money into it. It needs to be what was agreed in Sharm el-Sheikh last year at the last COP. There needs to be what was called a mosaic of financing solutions. So you need, we need as a government, and we will provide a contribution starting straight away, but you need more than that. We need to look at global financial solutions to this global problem. And included in that, what I expect coming out of COP, we'll be working particularly with the Kenyan and French and other governments who are looking to establish a task force that can devise other mechanisms of providing income into that fund, including the likes of aviation levies or maritime levies and reform of the multilateral development banks.
It will be a user pays type fund, will it?
No, I think it needs a combination of different sources, and included in that is being considered, should be looked at, is the prospect of fossil fuel companies paying into directly through a similar type levy. So the details of that won't be agreed in Dubai, but the principle does need to be agreed.
And the mechanisms established to deliver
it.
I want to be clear for our listeners so we know what we might be facing here. You're not disputing that figure of up to 2.5 billion as being the loss and damage bill for Ireland by 2030. It's just how
I don't think it was 2.5. I think it was lower than that. But
no,
it's
they
still
said
a very
between
number.
1.5 and 2.5 by 2030. Yeah. So it could be up to 2.5 billion. You're saying that won't all come from the Exchequer, but we might have new taxes, levies and charges paid on what we use as individuals and as companies in this country to take us to that figure.
We need a variety of things. Firstly, we need funding loss and damage, but we also need to fund the adaptation, so you reduce the amount of loss and damage, and also fund the reduction in emissions, because fundamentally, if we don't do that, then the loss and damage, you can never cover it. You can never, once you go to runaway climate change, loss and damage would go beyond any ability of anyone to pay, because it would be so significant. So we need not just a range of financing sources, we also need to direct it in a variety of different ways. And Ireland can be good at this, because we tend to, first of all, be good at development aid. We don't do it in a tied way. We're not there for our commercial interests or our military interests. We tend to have a good understanding how you work with local communities and local governments to make it most effective. So our contribution will be small as part of percentage of the whole, because we are a small country. But actually, we can. Our voice is listened to with respect, because I think of our tradition, our role within the United Nations especially. We put a lot of our store into United Nations systems to try and address problems. Now, it's far from an ideal system. It's got all the contradictions and complexities you mentioned here at the start, but it is our only choice. Mm-hmm. It's our only mechanism and vehicle.
But you suggested that we will be first out of the traps, or amongst the first, in paying into the loss and damage fund. So we could be looking at a situation where Ireland is paying up and others aren't.
Well, we have a proud record in this area because we did significantly change not just the European position, but also the international perspective. And in that, our role particularly was to protect, recognise that the most vulnerable countries needed protection. So it'll be working with our colleagues. We don't do solo runs. It's not all for our kind of getting the headlines or whatever. But I think it's right that we should be one of the first because we were one of the countries that was most influential in helping, making this really important development happen.
All right. Can we come back now to politics and events of this week? We played a clip of Helen McEntee from the Dáil Chamber at the beginning of the programme, and in that clip she described the people involved in the riots last week as scumbags and thugs. Do you feel that that's appropriate language for a Justice Minister to use?
Every single person, I think, were affected by what happened last Thursday in a way that is more emotive or more powerful than anything I can consider remember in a long time. Maybe I'm speaking here as a Dubliner because this was about my city and about how people are safe in my city. So if people are using strong language in that regard, I'm not going to be the first to jump up and say you can't use that language. Can I say, though, the response, I think, needs to be quite broad. Yes, we need to obviously look at the, you know, learn the lessons from policing and so on. But in my contribution shortly after Helen spoke, I had a few words to say. One of the first things I said is, and I keep coming back to this, Michael Staines was the first commissioner of the Garda Síochána. He actually was one of Colin's guys. He was in the GPO. He was part there in 1916 on Collins Street. But he went on to be the first commissioner of the Guards, and a brilliant first commissioner, because in that highly charged atmosphere, when there was all sorts of guns, when there was all sorts of tensions, all sorts of difficulties coming out of the Civil War, he made that famous line, first line of the Garda Síochána, that the Garda Síochána shall keep the peace, not by force of arms, but through the confidence of the people. Having the confidence of the people. And I think it's important that we really do retain that in this difficult time. I think the Garda Síochána showed real heroism in around Parnell Square, Carnell Street last week. And I think the Irish people recognise that and support them.
Yeah, but listen to what we heard yesterday. You know, tasers, pepper spray, more public order policing, facial recognition technology. Like, the face of policing in Ireland is at risk now of changing beyond recognition.
And I don't think it should. I think there's real strength in our character of policing and how we deal with conflict, how we retain the confidence of the public. I think that's important. But it isn't just about the policing, Claire. I would argue that we do need to look, we need to look at the whole issues of how we manage integration in our city and in our country, how we get that right, that certain areas aren't, don't have such a large number of people coming in that it's difficult for local communities. We need to balance that and get that right. And I know my colleagues, Roderick O'Gorman and Joe O'Brien, are really conscious of that and really working to try and get this right in very, very difficult circumstances. But I'd go beyond.
The conclusion from what you've just said is that your ministers haven't been getting it right up to now.
No, they have. I think an incredibly, what's the net increase? 75,000 people into our country last year with 100,000 people coming from Ukraine. I mean, that was an almost impossible task that they have done in a way that I think has been really to the highest of standards and the highest of in the interest of the Irish people. But can I make the point? It isn't just about that as well. I believe, and I'm speaking maybe here as Minister of Transport now, we need to look at our city and other cities and towns around the country. How do we create an environment in the city that is safe and attractive and want people want to come into and that businesses thrive in? There's a whole variety of ways in which you create a safe environment, and partly you start first of all by what is the environment, what is the actual the number of people on the street, the type of transport system you have, the type of businesses you have. The more, in a sense, in my mind, the more we can make our city centres particularly, and suburbs, but particularly the city centres, a really attractive location to come into, to work into, to live in, that is part of the solution as well. If you come at this
along
just with a very
the,
narrow
the tasers and the pepper spray and the facial recognition technology.
Well, I think the facial recognition technology, we've agreed earlier this year, and it was an approach that I was happy to agree to. Yes, we need to deliver the body cams, that legislation for Garda Síochána, so they can video what's happening as they're engaging with the public. And that's good for the guards, but also good for the public, because you can, you have a check to see how events happened. But separately, we will introduce legislation next year, as we agreed, to allow the retrospective, so not looking, not live, life, not in a sense where you might have sensed, oh, that camera's looking at me now, and there's an immediate computer, artificial intelligence, machine-based learning, being able to detect who I am and what I'm doing and whatever. I think we would lose or could lose the public if there was that sense of surveillance or that sense of intrusion into civil liberties. That's not where we'll go. But we will go to assist our guards to make sure that things like, for example, what they're doing at the moment, having to assist through thousands of hours of historic camera footage to make sure that they've the ability there to do that quickly, still absolutely respecting civil liberties
and using
justice
FRT
systems.
But do you think that the government now needs to communicate with the public and say, you need to expect radically different tactics now from the guards?
I don't agree that that is what we should be doing. I think we need to make sure the guards have all the resources they need. But I go back to what I said at the start here, Claire. I think in some ways, the way our guards police, in terms, which is different. If I look at some of our continental colleagues or look in the States, how they arrive on the scene in terms of, and sometimes I see it the way I see it, they heighten the problem by their tactics. I think our guards actually have a tradition, a culture and an ability to police in a way, going back to that first line I said, that they retain the confidence of the people. And in that way, that's where you protect the peace. And yes, you need all the equipment and technology and other mechanisms, but it should not lose that characteristic and quality and connection between An Garda Síochána and the Irish people. We live in a republic. What I really dislike about the kind of this far right, particularly all the stuff you see online, it's depicting us as something we are not. We are a country that has that sense, in my mind, of citizenship and common membership of a republic. And if you start going down the other route of kind of divisive, polarised, hate-inducing, poisonous atmosphere, that's the biggest risk. And I think we can counter that. I think we are better than that.
But calling them thugs and scumbags probably doesn't help if you're trying to avoid polarisation.
True, but in the heat of the moment, people will say things, myself included. So no one, listen, pulling up someone on that's not going to address the issue. I think first and foremost, we do need to have a collective response that is recognising that while there are real problems, there are real issues, including safety on our streets, we have a quality and a capability in this country that we also want to protect and not lose in this approach.
Minister, we need to leave it there, but thank you very much for joining us from our Rock the Studio. That's Minister Eamon Ryan.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.